Hi, this is Daniel Garber, the movies for CulturalMoney.com and CIUT 89.5 FM. It's 1981 in Liberia, West Africa. Cinder Reeves is a young man in a small town, but when his sister marries strongman Charles Taylor, his life totally changes. He moves from a small town to a mansion in Monrovia, the capital. He gains wealth, glamour, and a father figure to learn from. Taylor teaches him right from wrong, so he's crushed years later when he discovers his idol is actually a corrupt politician amassing great wealth by exploiting everything from rubber plantations to blood diamonds. And when Taylor begins a campaign of mass killings, transnational wars armed with child soldiers, an international weapons deal, even a collusion with Al-Qaeda, Cinder decides it's time to act. He presents his findings to an international court, intending to stop all the violence. But this places him in great physical danger. Is Cinder blowing a whistle or betraying his own family? Betrayal is a new documentary that follows the unusual case of Cinder Reeves and Charles Taylor over decades on the world stage. It's narrated by the film's subject himself, supplemented by talking heads in the form of journalists, lawyers, and public figures. The documentary is illustrated with amazing period news footage and background materials. It's directed by prize-winning Toronto-based filmmaker Lena McDonald, who appeared on the show a decade ago about her first documentary feature, Mom and Me. Full disclosure, I worked with Lena on an early stage of Betrayal and am blown away by the final version. Betrayal is having its world premiere at the Hot Docs Festival on Tuesday, April 29th. And I'm very pleased to have here with me in studio Lena McDonald to tell us more about Betrayal. Hi, Lena. Great to see you again. Thanks so much for coming in.
Hi, Daniel. I'm so happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
So you first encountered Cinder Reeves, was it in Accra, Ghana?
That's when I first met him in person. But okay. I first heard about his story when he was making an asylum bid here in Canada. And at the time, I started reading about his story. It was after his immigration process was pretty much concluding. But he had been denied asylum where his wife and children had been granted it. And that piqued my interest. I thought, since when do we separate families? And the more I read about his story and learned about him, the more I was both astounded at his sacrifice and aghast that Canada would treat him as they did.
Well, what did Canada do and why?
Yeah, so Canada denied his asylum, citing, of course, his association with Charles Taylor, which is absurd because he is like pretty much single-handedly, you know, the central figure who helped bring about Taylor's end of, you know, reign of terror, of corruption, and of exploitation of blood diamonds, and helping really to end two civil wars. You know, of course, that wasn't Cinder's only contribution. It was the only one we had time for in the film because, you know, it's really so many details. But he contributed to multiple other cases, including Victor Boot, the notorious arms dealer, and Gus Coenhoven, another notorious arms dealer.
Yes, I heard about that. These are like international, like the scary people you see in action movies, the bad guys.
Exactly. Lord of War is based on a book that's based on Cinder's testimony and evidence and intel, as is the movie Blood Diamonds, which is based on Blood from Stones by, you know, Doug Farah, who's in the film and who cites Cinder as his central source.
So this documentary as well, does feel like you're watching a Hollywood thriller. So give a broad outline of the situation in Africa. I know it's a huge, decades-long story, but let's talk about Charles Taylor and his rise to power.
Sure, yeah. So, you know, as you mentioned, Cinder goes to live with Charles Taylor in the early 80s. And at that point, Charles Taylor had a position in the current government, the government of the Times office. And he used that as leverage to essentially make international connections, and he was actually arrested in the United States for embezzlement by that government, Samuel Doe's government. He somehow managed to escape.
But this is very interesting in the what your documentary reveals. So go on.
That's right. So he somehow manages to escape, and proceeds to go and have his own coup. And over the course of, you know, the next decade and a half, two civil wars in Liberia, and an election which some say he won, had international oversight. Some say it was absolutely not free and fair. There was a famous slogan during his election campaign that said, "You killed my ma, you killed my pa, I'll vote for you." So, you know, take from that what you will and what it might mean about where.
And wasn't that his side slogan?
That was his slogan.
I still can't fathom that.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think he is very wily, is very intelligent. He was American educated, but beyond being American educated, he just was a really brilliant person. And even over the course of my interviews, you know, I interviewed people all over the world, both on the diamond side, authors, international justice, and everybody said he was one of the most magnanimous people they'd ever met. I spoke with Tom Zellner, who, helped write Shake Hands with the Devil, you know, and all was involved in all kinds of, and he said, you know, everybody he met when he was sort of, you know, doing his own research and work on the continent and in Belgium with diamond, you know, dealers said, everybody just said, when you were in the room with Taylor, your jaw dropped, you felt like you were in the presence of some, you know, not just royalty, something greater than royalty, like godly, like he really had a powerful and magnanimous energy. So, you know, of course, he used that to both be in the pocket of the CIA and in Gaddafi's pocket. I think he used everybody. He was a real power player, you know, from a tiny little, quite impoverished, you know, maybe because of Western extraction, but really, truly quite a small country. But he managed to make big waves, you know, over the course of his presidency and those civil wars.
From what I understand, Liberia is one of the few African countries that was never colonized. It was settled by returned slaves from the U.S., but who later became an elite class who basically ruled the country, where the indigenous people never had anything to do with the political side until Charles Taylor and Doe.
That's right. Yeah. So, you know, we try to get a little bit into it to make sure people have some backgrounder in the film. But, you know, we didn't want to do a history lesson entirely or a wiki or, you know, but it was important that people understood that fact that, you know, Liberia, the country as we know it today, may as well have been like a sponsor state of the U.S. It was where repatriated slaves were sent and by the American Colonization Society. You know, it's my personal belief, and it's not my idea, but that, you know, that project wasn't just a radical one. It wasn't just some kind of emancipatory thing. It was actually kind of racist in its beginnings. It's sort of, oh, what are we going to do with all of these newly freed black slaves? Oh, we want to get them out of our country.
Let's get rid of them.
You know?
It was tied somewhat to the abolitionist movement as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. It was operating on two fronts. You know, of course, it is tied to the abolitionist movement, and at the same time, there's this sort of motivation, racist, fundamentally racist
totally.
Motivation. So the other piece of it was, oh, great, now we're going to have an interest in West Africa. So, for instance, like a country rich in rubber at the time when, you know, the auto industry is on the rise. So, you know, just a small detail, the U.S. loans Liberia the money with high interest to create a port. To build a port from which they can extract the rubber for pennies, right?
Yeah.
So it's been, I think it's like a fundamentally kind of colonial project that, you know, of course, repatriated slaves went back there. You know, that whole area of West Africa, there are dozens and dozens and dozens of tribes of different people who lived in various amounts of peace and stability. You know, obviously there's, you know, probably a history of some fractious component. But, ultimately, the Americo-Liberians, as they're known, created plantation systems and like a political power class that, ruled for over 100 years where, Native Liberians didn't have a vote.
So let's get back to Cinder, because when you saw him, he was hidden and on the run. He was afraid of being assassinated by Charles Taylor.
That's true. Yeah. So, Sindor goes, lives in the home of Charles Taylor. Charles Taylor happens to be this kind of, like, as we said, like, powerful, wily guy who's half indigenous and half Americo-Liberian, and with a kind of promise to unite the country, let's say. And Sindor, turns state witness on him. And, a powerful guy like that, even after a massive conviction, the first sitting head of state convicted since the Nuremberg trials, he still has power in the country. He still, he sways elections. He has, none of his money was ever confiscated. So Sindor, having informed on him, having turned state witness, having helped put him away for 50 years, has been on the run pretty much for the last 20 years. And in my opinion, that is a stain on international justice. It's a stain on all the folks who've, had access and used him to make cases, despite whatever pieces of help or assistance or protection or care they may have offered him. He has been on the run for 20 years.
And yet you went back a second time and managed to get a genuine interview, enough footage for him to narrate the entire movie. Talk about that trip back. What was it like personally? What was it like for you being in Liberia?
Sure. Yeah. No. So I've made a few trips over there and over the years. My first one was on the heels of an assassination attempt. We spoke at length then. I've spent quite a deal of time getting to know Sindor, developing a relationship with him. And COVID shut us down. We finally got the film funded in 2019, and I went over again then. So 2015, after the an assassination attempt in 2019, where I witnessed him kind of really receiving threats and knowing that he, helping him move from safe house to safe house, helping him escape kidnap via DEA agents, And then, I went back again recently to meet him again, and I landed, unfortunately, in Sierra Leone, right into the middle of, a really shocking violent coup attempt.
Oh, my God.
I was also 7 months pregnant at the time, so it was wild.
And COVID.
So it really was wild. I think that I've met many different versions of Sindor. When I first met him, I can identify with them in these really bizarre ways. But it's been a long journey. It's been crazy. I care deeply about him. I am concerned for him, and we're doing everything we can right now, actually, to work with whistleblower orgs to try to get him resettled somewhere.
And finally, we just have a minute left, but can you tell us, why should people come and see this movie, and what will they get out of it?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the film ultimately is a sort of a question about, dance with the one who brung you versus the greater good. But it's also a little bit of, we're at a critical inflection point for international humanitarian law. And if this is what these, great horse power trading halls of justice do, if they consume and spit out witnesses, victims, and families, what prospect do we have, right? We're at a time of authoritarian kind of rule where we're returning to these kind of strongmen and autocrats. And I worry for us all about what, the prospects for international humanitarian law, for international justice, for victims, witnesses, and families everywhere.
Thanks so much for talking with me, Leah. Lena McDonald's knockout documentary, Betrayal, is having its world premiere at Hot Docs on April 29th. You better go see it. This is Daniel Garb of the Movies each Saturday morning on CIUT 89.5 FM and my website, culturalmining.com.
Thanks.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Excellent.
Oh, man.